It's 9 a.m., time for the only Garden Talk radio show in Milwaukee. Tell your friends, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener is on the air. Join us and let's grow together.
Coming up today on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show, we're going to go over five things that you can make in your own kitchen that you maybe thought you could only buy at the store, as well as misconceptions of being a prepper. We'll go over what a prepper is and some of the bad things people think preppers are and the doomsday experience that they are trying to preach. Plus, our guest, Tess Brzezinski, will be with us. We're going to talk about fungi and mushrooms and understanding how you can grow them in your own home and backyard. Plus, your garden questions. Garden Talk Radio is on the air, and it starts right now.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird, some of the realest gardeners that you'll ever know, always willing to share their knowledge, mistakes, and working to grow together. Founders of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com that contains over 1,100 garden videos to show and teach others to grow some of what they eat. Join them for the next hour as they cover practical gardening information that has worked for them and more. Now here they are.
It is the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show on WNOV 860 AM and FM 106.5 in the city of Milwaukee. So glad you have taken some time to join us on the program. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner. There you are.
Hi, Baird.
You can reach us in a couple of different formats. One is the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline,
414-444-5250. Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents, protects newly installed plants and trees, shields pruning damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit, nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. You can visit ivyorganics.com for more information, or you can call, like Joey said, with any of your questions or comments during the show at 414-444-5250.
TWVG show, hashtag TWVG on Twitter as well. So we're going to get into the program here, and we're looking at items here in which you can make in your home. Many people think that a lot of stuff at the grocery store or the big box store, whatever you want to call it, are items that have to be made in massive factories or big facilities in which you can't make at home. There's a chemistry procedure there, and they put it in a can and you bring it home and you have it. But there are
magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're going to go over four different items here in which you can make five that you can make very, very easily in your own kitchen with just some minimal amount of knowledge. It's not like you have to have a degree in science in order to accomplish these items here.
Right. So,
well, let's start with one that's we can do pretty much any time here because fall's around. It's raw cider vinegar.
Right, and this you can make with apple scraps, pear scraps, or pineapple scraps. So you're most likely going to make it with apple or pear at this point. Maybe pineapples usually get cheap in, like, January, so maybe you could try it then, too. But basically what you're going to take, you can use the whole apple, you just have to cut it up, but typically what you're going to do is you're going to use the scraps. So say you're going to make some applesauce or an apple pie or something, you would take the scraps, so the peels and the cores, and what you do is you make your own fermented vinegar. So, like, you can find, a lot of people are using raw apple cider vinegar, so this is that same thing. There's many uses for it, but you can make your own.
Yeah. So, and again, you can only do this with three different items, pears, apples, and pineapple.
And it's a pretty straightforward process. It takes a few weeks. First, you take your scraps, you put water, and you want to use either a filtered water or non-fluoride water. So,
well, we use well water.
We use well water. But if you have city water, you're going to have to either buy some distilled water or filter your water because you don't want that. Some of the stuff that's in the city water, and that's okay. So you put it in a jar. We use half-gallon mason jars. You put some sugar, and there's recipes online, and we have, I think, a video on it. A
couple of videos, yes.
And some sugar, and then if you have some raw vinegar, maybe you have some in the house, or you have some that you made, you can add some of that, too, to kind of get the process started. If you don't, it's okay.
Yeah, it's considered a starter. It helps jumpstart the procedure, so it maybe accelerates your time, you know, a couple of days in the long run.
Right. So then you let that sit for about a week, and you want to stir it. Then every day, so stir it every day, because you want to put like a coffee filter or something on top so that it can breathe, but so that bugs don't get in.
Right. So that's one thing in which you can do.
And then you just, it's pretty straightforward after that. Tea, you can make your own tea. So if you grow herbs, like we grow lemongrass, because I think it's pretty, but also because you can make tea from it. And you can use it in cooking and things like that, but you can dry your herbs. So say you grow mint, lemongrass, what have you, even something like lemon peels, you can dehydrate those to make your...
Grind them up, to a powder and then put them in a filter bag, or will you just...
You can just chop them.
Chop them and drop them in and then remove them.
Right.
Okay.
You can use a tea thing, I don't know what it's called, the little reusable ones that are metal, tea ball.
There you go.
Yeah. So there's that option.
And there's really no limit to what you can infuse into the water. As long as you feel you can tolerate the taste, you can infuse it.
Right.
Okay.
And you can use it to enhance your own tea. Maybe you make black tea often and you want to add some lemongrass to add to the flavor. Go ahead. You know, you don't have to make you can kind of be creative.
Another thing in which we can make in our own house is vanilla extract. And this is not the generic or the
imitation.
This is the true 100% vanilla extract that involves vodka.
Typically, yes. You're going to take some sort of hard liquor. It's typically going to be vodka. Or you could do like a white rum as well. And what you do is you take your vanilla beans.
But where do we get the vanilla beans first? We're not able to grow them here in the Wisconsin area.
Well, you can get them from a spice store.
Okay.
There's one that is very well known in the area. There's lots of locations. And
you can also direct order online, too, right?
Yep, you can go online, too. But if you're looking for local, then you can go local. Spice stores have them. So what you do is you let the vanilla – there's like – they sell them vanilla beans. And what you do is you kind of – you don't have to – you can chop them up, whatever you want to do. I chop them up so that they have – more of a chance to kind of soak.
Or surface area
surface
as well.
Surface area, yeah. And then you let them sit in the vodka for about a month or so, just depending. You can do this with mint leaves, too. I've heard of people doing it with all sorts of stuff. So you would have to kind of look that part up online. But the vanilla has been successful for us. You let it soak, and then for about a month or so. And you don't have to remove the vanilla beans. You can just continue to use it. It'll just enhance the flavor.
Now, do you have to put this in a dark container, or can it be in a light, like clear glass container?
You would want to do a dark container, or just put it in a dark area of your home.
Kind of like whenever they brew beer, they put it in a dark container in order to keep it whatever it needs to do. There's a science behind why the bottles are brown and dark color rather than clear.
Right. I stored it in a dark container. I got some bottles from, I don't remember where, but I got some bottles. But when I was making it, I made it in a mason jar. And we have this cabinet above our kitchen sink that has, like, very little light that gets to it. And that's where I put it.
Another thing is broth. Now, broth can be chicken broth, beef broth, vegetable broth.
Right.
And the procedure is the same in all three, just the ingredients are different, correct?
Right. So the reason why you're doing this is because bone broth has known to have really good properties for your digestion, actually. So people make bone broth because it's good for your digestion. It's also just good for you in general. You're getting a lot of nutrients from those bones. You can do this with vegetables. That's fine. So what I do is, say I got a chicken, like we ate chicken or something,
right.
Or we got like one of those rotisserie chickens, whatever. I freeze the bones. And if there's meat on there, that's fine too.
Okay.
What's wrong?
No, I just want to make sure that we didn't have to scrub the bones clean before we froze it, because some people might think that, bone broth only has to be bones.
No, you can do that. Some people get chicken feet and do this, so whatever you want. And so then what I do is then I usually, at some point, I'm like, okay, I have enough of what would be about two chickens. And then I put it in a pot with water, and then I put any kind of vegetable scraps I have, garlic scraps, onion scraps. Say I open the fridge and I'm like, oh, these carrots look kind of questionable. I'm just going to toss them in there. Whatever. Some people will save their vegetable scraps in a freezer bag, and then when they're ready to to make the broth, they do that. So there's options like that. So then you just boil it down. I boil it for about 12 hours. I don't boil it for 12 hours. I get it boiling, let it simmer for about 12 hours. I strain it twice at least.
Because we're putting this in a very large pot, and the ingredients are submerged under the water, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so you put in a very large pot. You can add pepper, garlic, whatever flavors. I wouldn't add much salt. There's really no necessity for that because you're cooking it for so long.
And this is kind of why we're doing it at home, because the amount of salt that is in these broths that we get from the store is outrageous.
Right.
And the ones we're making at home have a minimal to almost no salt levels in them.
Right.
Okay.
So, and you can, if you decide to make soup with it, you can add salt at that time. I just don't add any salt when I'm cooking it down because I don't see the need for it. So you let it cook down, you strain it, and then I freeze it. You can can it. I've noticed that if I freeze it in jars, even if I leave extra space for the expansion, they still crack for some reason, so you might want to freeze it in freezer bags.
And when we, if we can it, we can do a water bath procedure, or do we have to pressure can the items?
You have to pressure can it.
Okay, pressure can the broth.
Right.
But so the easier way would be gallon freezer bags, fill them about half full, or in quantities in which you know you will use in one
about
use.
Quarts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One usage, so you're not thawing it, taking two cups, freezing it back. The repetitiveness there can not be good mm-hmm. for the freeze thaw cycle on it. And then another thing, and this is the same for vegetable, chicken, beef, whatever the case is.
Right.
Another one, and our final one, is fruit leathers. We can go to the store and pay very high price for what is called fruit roll-ups. We can do this in our own home.
Sometimes it's called fruit leather.
Yeah, by utilizing a dehydrator with a fruit leather or fruit roll-up tray, which is a plastic, and you can probably construct one of these with like wax paper over your existing dehydrator tray, as long as you allow the air to circulate through the center and the edges. But you can take your favorite fruit and puree it, add there's recipes online. I'm not familiar with the exact recipe in which the procedure happens, but you can do it and then dehydrate it and have your fruit leathers or your fruit roll-ups for your kids or for you, and you know what's in it. That's the other thing.
Right. And it's probably a little bit – it's better for you typically, especially because if you use something like strawberries, you're not going to strain the seeds, so you'll have those seeds, which is good fiber for you.
Yeah. So raw vinegar, tea, vanilla extract, broth, and fruit leathers are some things in which – maybe you thought you could only or only was able to buy at the store, but we can also make them in our own home. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about preppers, the misconception of preppers. If you don't know what a prepper is, we'll go over that. And there's some things that people don't like about preppers right after this.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener.com has all the gardening information you need. Videos, digital magazines, replays of shows, and more.
Beans and Barley Market and Cafe, a neighborhood specialty grocery store for the east side and greater Milwaukee area, where you can find all you need, from fresh produce to bakery to organic frozen dinners, from wine to fresh cheese, carrot juice, a health food store with hundreds of products, vitamins, supplements, bath and body items, magazines, cards, books, and a knowledgeable staff. Catering available, open daily at 8 a.m. The restaurant serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week with a menu of good, healthy, homemade food, including vegetarian and non-vegetarian specialties. 1901 East North Avenue, Milwaukee, 414-278-7877, and online at beansandbarley.com. Mycorrhizae is a beneficial fungus from PlantSuccessOrganics.com that will greatly increase your plant's germination ability and healthier root structure. You can increase seed sprouting, root growth, and general plant germination. Mycorrhizae can be used with hydroponic root cutting, seed sprouting, coco core, and soil. PlantSuccessOrganics.com carries powder, granule, and tablet form of mycorrhizae. Increase the level of mycorrhizae in your soil to give your plant the optimal opportunity to produce incredible harvests. For more information and to purchase, visit PlantSuccessOrganics.com. Are you short on time when it comes to grocery shopping? Yes, I'm talking to you. ShopWoodmans.com offers online shopping for store pickup or delivery on their over 60,000 plus items at Woodman's everyday low prices. Order online, select a pickup or delivery time, and create more time to do what you want. Leave the work to Woodman's. Also, check out the ShopWoodmans.com app. You can even make specialist requests, like specific sizes of produce. For more information, visit ShopWoodmans.com.
Zazz Products, offering great quality supplements that can help personal health and increase longevity. Committed to bringing you the highest quality products at the lowest price. Find out more at ZazzProducts.com. Tall Earth Wood Treatment, all-in-one preservative and stain, offers lifetime protection and creates a unique silver-aged wood finish. All ingredients are non-toxic, eco-friendly, perfect for garden beds and veg trunk. Find out more at TallEarth.com. Free shipping on all orders. Use coupon code WISCONVEG to save 15% off orders placed at TallEarth.com. Shield and Seal Vacuum Sealers and the highest quality vacuum sealing products, unique black and clear in all black bags, protecting your produce and product better than traditional bags. Find out more at shieldandseal.com.
So many pumpkins. Around 90 to 95% of pumpkins in the United States are grown in the state of Illinois. 80% of the pumpkins that are supplied in the United States are available only in October. There are more than 45 different varieties of pumpkin. They range in color from red, white, green, and have names like Hooligan, Cotton Candy, and Orange Smoothie.
Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center offers an awesome selection of high-quality garden and landscape products. We have just the plants you're looking for. Annuals, perennials, veggies, herbs, and more. Plus, you can always count on us to answer all of your questions and offer expert advice. Blue Mel's also carries the largest selection of bulk landscape materials in the area. Enjoy a beverage from our coffee shop while your kids run around in our huge playground. Join our growing list of highly satisfied customers. Visit the garden center that offers everything you're looking for. Visit Blue Mel's today.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Haas Tools, Tree Diaper, Root Maker, Seeding Square, Rebel Green, Dripping Springs Oil, Zazz Products, Shield and Seal, Pomona Universal Pectin. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Many people have misconceptions about what a prepper is or what preppers do. And so I'm just going to kind of define what a prepper is. It's a person who believes in catastrophic or just regular disasters and emergencies likely to occur in their lifetime or their future, and they have active preparations for it, sometimes by stockpiling items, sometimes just by being conscientious of where they live and the natural elements that they have to deal with.
Well, we saw a lot of this during Y2K, that people felt the world was going to end, and then they were stockpiling hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of guns, food, generators, in bunkers and wherever else.
Right. So those people.
Didn't make that, you know, and I understand the being prepared. I get that. But if the world is going to end, what makes, you know, okay, I can survive 3 years on what I've got, then what are you going to do if the world's done? But anyway, that's my thing.
Okay, that's not the point here.
That's not the point here.
Calm down.
Yeah.
So basically,
they get a bad rap.
Yeah, they do get a bad rap. And people think that they're expecting, like, an apocalypse, that they're isolated people. Maybe they have a bunker. They stockpile ammunition, guns, what have you. And are those people out there? Yes. It could be your neighbor for all you know. There was a Sections article about these people that had all this stuff stored from the 50s. They lived next to these people for years. Then they sold the house, and people who moved in found all this stuff, and they had no idea. So you don't know. However, there are good things about being a prepper, having a prepper state of mind, or thinking ahead. Like, I have first aid kits in all of our vehicles because you never know, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of a prepper thing. A lot of preppers have first aid kits, know about first aid, CPR, things like that. That's one thing. But even if you live in an area such as just Wisconsin, you might want to keep some food on hand in case you do get stuck in a snowstorm, so you're not trying to run to the store and get all the milk and bread to make your milk and bread sandwiches before the snow hits.
Yeah, I always wondered why it was just milk and bread.
I think you need eggs, too, though. Okay. Then you can make French toast.
Okay. But here's the thing. When it comes to being a prepper, that term kind of came to being 60s or 70s. For some of you listeners, if you remember as a child or you listen to your grandparents talk, they did this every year. Hey, we grow a garden, we can it because in the winter we can't grow food and we don't have Woodmans or Outposts or Beans and Barley down the street in which we can just run and get a pineapple and, on December 17th if we want a pineapple. We have to prepare and store the food because place if you don't have it, you don't eat.
Right, and I think as a society, we've become used to the convenience of that.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's how I grew up. You know, we were not very far from any type of store. We could walk to the gas station if we needed a gallon of milk, whatever. So it's not like there's nothing wrong with that. However, it's kind of good, I think, at times to take a step back, think about the store might be coming.
Well, look at the hurricane down
right.
south.
It makes sense because you don't know. And you don't know if you shop at the store at the wrong time of the week, there might be stocking and you might not have everything that you need at that store. So there's things that get kind of messy in a sense. And if you are prepared, at least you're prepared.
Right. And not all preppers live in a bunker underground or in a gated property. And not all preppers have thousands of firearms and millions of rounds of ammunition. There are some individuals that do fall into that category, but a typical prepper is somebody who is just kind of vast in a lot of different areas of, you know, hunting and fishing and preserving and gardening and mechanical maintenance. Kind of a one-all-fit-all type of individual who understands, you know, they know a little bit about a lot of things.
Like you.
Well,
are you a prepper?
I
do you have a bunker?
We don't have a bunker, no.
You're not telling me that?
No, we do not have a bunker. Okay. And you don't need a bunker to be a prepper.
I know. But it's something definitely to think about is...
And you don't have to be isolated either.
No. But that part does sound nice sometimes.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah. So it's something to think about is how... Maybe not necessarily how you're going to store food for the next 4 years or whatever. Zombies are going to come knocking on your door or whatever occurs. But it's good to kind of think about, okay, well, winter's coming, right? So, and
you don't have to be a prepper in order to have, like, an extra shovel in the back of the car, a blanket. That's just sometimes common sense to have.
Right. And sometimes it's just something that you do because that's how you... you've lived in this region for a long time. You just kind of are aware of that type of thing. And just because you are prepared and conscientious and thinking about what elements you may have to deal with does not make you a prepper.
Right. No. Well, it doesn't make you a prepper, but preparedness is important mm-hmm. in whatever realm that you're doing, just like us. We don't live in a bunker. We don't have firearms. We don't, you know, have 10 years worth of food stored up. But we look ahead and we plan. Okay, yes, we have the convenience of going to the store just down the road if we need to. But if we prepare and we grow and we can, there is an upfront cost for the equipment in order for that to happen. But in the long run, that now jar of pasta sauce that is how much at the store is now pennies on the dollar because we can 12, 15, 20 quarts of that with the abundance of the harvest that we have. Now, you can't live off pasta sauce for the year, but that, including other canned items, can sustain and greatly reduce your bill for groceries. You're preparing in that way in order to save money, as well as you see.
Aside from food. People also always assume situations. So, like, for example, I cut my finger actually chopping vegetables one morning for my lunch, and I didn't realize how bad the cut was. It's healing or whatever. I mean, it wasn't deep or anything, but it was kind of gnarly. And so I put a Band-Aid on it, and I assumed that if that Band-Aid got weird during the day from washing my hands or whatever, that the first aid kit at work would have Band-Aids. So I made that assumption. I work for a very large corporation.
I'm guessing the assumption was wrong?
It was wrong.
Okay.
Right. So because, and I work for a large corporation that you think would be on top of it. Their first aid kit would be well stocked. Well, no. So I felt glad that I had Band-Aids. I have a little first aid kit in my car that had Band-Aids and whatnot in my car so that I could keep my situation covered during the day. But so you kind of have to think about that, not saying that you need to run out and get a first aid kit for your car, but think like, okay, maybe you shouldn't rely on...
You may have the items in your house already.
Right. So maybe you shouldn't, you know, just put some Band-Aids and some junk in a baggie and put it in your glove box. Like, just kind of think like, you know, maybe I'll be on the road. I might need a Band-Aid if you got kids. Kids are always scraping themselves and stuff. So it's kind of good to think about those type of things.
Right, and another way in which we can prep, not so much in the let's build up the stockpile of laundry soap and food and all that, but it's also you can save money by couponing too. That's kind of a form of prepping as well. You're saving money by getting items in which you will need.
Does anybody really need 50 bottles of mustard, though?
No, I'm just saying in general you can
like maybe a couple extra toothbrushes or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are people, and I know people who fall in the category of prepping, and we follow them on social media, and they can be very out there with their post about I'm preparing for this, or this is going to happen, or the government is this. You know, you've seen the very outlandish remarks, and maybe there is some validity to some of those comments. But many people think, based on those criteria in which they post, those individuals might be a little not all there.
I don't know if I would say that.
Some people do feel that way.
And
with everybody's preparedness, there is a certain level in which they've said, okay, I have this goal, and if this happens, it may be a crazy belief, but if it happens, I am ready for that event if it occurs.
Right. So, exactly. And that's on you. You know, if you feel that that's something you want to do, that's fine by all means. I mean, some people probably think we're crazy because we grow a huge garden or whatever. So it just kind of depends on your perspective. But I guess
you need to look and see, you know, having just a couple of days of food is not a bad thing.
No.
To be prepared for.
Right.
No matter where you're at.
No matter where you're at, because like I said, you go to the store on the wrong day, they're stocking the shelves. What if that truck didn't come that week?
Typically, a grocery store has about a 3-day, 1 to 3 day of fresh produce on hand.
Right. I'm not talking about fresh produce. I'm talking about just canned items or shelf-stable items, non-perishable, whatever. Even in the freezer section, like a lot of times, there is a low amount of items. So if you think about that, we are very dependent on those trucks coming on time, those shipments coming on time.
So being a prepper is not a bad thing. It can be to a number of different levels or extremes. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tess. She is all about growing mushrooms, and we're going to understand, or I'm going to learn about mushrooms and fungi and all of this other stuff, and about growing mushrooms in your home and in your backyard right after this.
Got a question? Email the show at twvgshow@gmail.com.
Garden seeds do not have to cost a fortune, just 99 cents at migardener.com. Now with over 450 varieties of non-GMO, heirloom, and organic flower, vegetable, and herb seeds available year-round, pay less and get more seeds. Shipping as low as $2.50. That just makes sense. Go to migardener.com for seeds and garden needs, tools, and special blend fertilizers. migardener.com. It's that simple. Family-owned and operated.
Lost Tools wants to help you grow your own food. From seed starting supplies, hand tools, drip irrigation, harvesting equipment, and a complete line of all-natural pest control solutions, they've got you covered. Keep your garden weed-free with their time-tested, American-made wheel hose that are built to last a lifetime. And the precision garden seeders have proven design for planting a wide variety of seeds. Haas Tools has what you need to get the most out of your growing space, large or small. Free shipping and outstanding customer service. Shop online or request a free catalog at HaasTools.com.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Rebel Green, responsibly made natural products that are good for you and the environment. Made in the USA, plant-based, vegan, and always toxic-free. Find out more at rebelgreen.com.
Use coupon code WIVEG15 to save 15% off your next purchase at rebelgreen.com/shop.
Root Assassin, a garden tool that does all the root functions with its advanced shovel that has serrated edges on both sides. Find out more information at rootassassinshovel.com. Purple Cow Organics quickly and naturally increases the uptake of nutrients and water to your plants with their new bioactive vegetable supercharger designed to meet the unique needs by helping the living organisms in the soil help plants uptake the nutrients more quickly through their roots and leaves. Find out more at purplecoworganics.com. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Flame Engineering, Eco Garden Systems, Bobex, Plant Success, Beans and Barley, MI Gardener, Outpost Natural Food Co-op, Root Assassin, Manure Tea, The Gardener's Hollow Leg. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
You want to win money or you want to get free money, you can certainly do that by going to Blue Mel's Facebook page. And Holly, you've got the details about this. They've got a giant pumpkin in which you can guess the weight on, one guess per person. And if you are the winner, you receive a $50 gift card from Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center.
Yep, so until October 30th, you can submit your guess on the weight of Johnny Five.
That's a giant, giant pumpkin.
Right, so you can't do this on the Facebook page. You can find out the information on the Facebook page, but you have to go to the Cook's Nook, which is in Greendale,
yep,
5676 Broad Street, and you can put your guess on this giant pumpkin and win the gift card from Blue Mills.
So free money if you're good at guessing giant pumpkins. Now, I think one of the giant pumpkins, and maybe a new record for North America, was 2,520 pounds, something like that, over 2,000 pounds. I don't know if that's the size. This one doesn't appear to be that ginormous, but you can, it's free money, take a guess, and then you can get a lot of items either now or later at Blue Mills Landscape and Garden Center. They have their fall decor. They've got their pumpkins. They've got their kale.
Mums.
They've also got 40-plus varieties of landscape materials, sand, gravel, wood chips, compost, purple cow compost, and a variety of different formulations. Is that right?
Landscapey stuff.
Mm-hmm. And now is the time to do it. The weather's cooling down. You can get out. You can fill the holes up in the driveway, in the lawn, mulch around the plants. Where can we find Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center at?
They're at 4930 West Loomis Road in Greenfield, bluemels.com, or you can call 414-282-4220. They're just south of Layton on Loomis Road.
Well, Holly, let's go to the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline and bring in our next guest.
Now, Tess Brzezinski is the founder, head educator, and cultivator at the Fungi Freights Urban Farm and Environmental Studio. She's well-educated in science and many things, and she continues doing research on micromediation in the city of Detroit, and she's an environmental project manager. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to teach all of us, Holly, myself, and all of our listeners, more about mushrooms.
Of course, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, Tess, the first thing is, are mushrooms classified as a fungi, or is a fungi a different classification of mushrooms or something else?
So the answer to this question actually is all mushrooms are fungi. However, not all fungi are mushrooms, because mushrooms are considered the fruiting body or the reproductive system of the fungi itself. So it's kind of like an apple on the tree.
Interesting,
yeah. Now, growing your own mushrooms, is it easier than many people realize? I know we've seen kits at the garden center. We've seen the little spore
that
things
you put in the logs.
You put in the logs.
It as easy as the as videos and pictures portray it to be?
I would think so. I mean, there are complexities that come along with it. I think people just like maybe are a little intimidated because it's something so unfamiliar. It's not just like your average gardening of vegetables you don't see all the time. But if you just, you know, do a little bit of research and reading, I think it's a concept that's easily enough to grasp to do it on your own.
So growing mushrooms is far different than planting a tomato. There is some environmental conditions in which a mushroom needs in order to grow correctly. Can you go over some of the criteria in which, if we're going to grow them, let's say in the backyard, in a log, that what we need to know before we go buy spores and drill them into a log?
Absolutely. So they do sell, it's called a plug spawn, and it's an already inoculated dowel rod, and that's what you would use to inoculate a log. However, yes, there are some conditions, moisture regimes and temperatures to correctly grow the mushroom. So you kind of want to have it elevated off the ground, maybe against a shed. Keep it moist, watering it, you know, the log, like every couple weeks. You want to keep moisture within the wood itself so the mushrooms have enough moisture to grow, and keeping them kind of relatively warm, they can survive throughout the winter, and then it takes about a year for them to fruit out of the log. So there are some things to keep in mind, and there's a lot of books out there on cultivation that will go over it thoroughly.
Okay, can we, I don't know if you're on speakerphone, but if you are, could you take us off? There's some feedback.
I'm actually not on speakerphone.
Oh, okay. Now,
I want to go back to what she said about the inoculation. Now, for people who are unfamiliar with that term, does that mean that the spores are in a state in which, in the proper conditions on that dowel rod, that they will sprout, or what does inoculated spores mean?
So yeah, they are already the spores have already gotten to their vegetative structure, which is mycelium. So the dowel rod will actually contain mycelium, which is a vegetative form. It's kind of like the root structure of the mushroom itself. And so that's already in that state. And inoculating means just inserting it into the log itself. From there, it will spread through the log and eventually fruit.
So when we talk about, and it's been said in a lot of the survival programs you see online, on TV, that when you go, you have to know your mushrooms if you're going to go foraging in the woods. Otherwise, it's either do or die, unless you know what it is. How accurate is that statement?
Well, there's a quote some of us, like mushroom people, say, all mushrooms are edible, some only one. Yeah. And I would say it definitely is very important to know your mushrooms if you are foraging. There's many edible mushrooms that have look-alike mushrooms that contain toxic properties that can make you really ill. So the best thing to do if you want to, like, get into foraging is maybe look up a local organization. In Michigan, where I'm from, we have the Michigan Mushroom Hunters Club. There's also NAMA, the North American Mycological Association. Get a good field guide before you go in foraging for your, you know, for your edible mushrooms.
Whenever we decide to get some mushrooms to inoculate and put in logs, is there a go-to that you would recommend, Holly and myself and our listeners, that this is a good starter in order to understand the procedure and the process in which to grow mushrooms, or are all of them basically the same plant, grow, harvest, or is there some easier than others?
Well, for the logs specifically, the shiitake grows really well in logs, and I think that's what most people go to for log cultivation, because they're saprophytic and they digest the wood really well. Also, the oyster mushrooms are very good beginner mushroom because it's resilient and tends to do very well in many conditions of cultivation. You don't have to really be so sterile or in a lab, because that species is pretty resilient and can survive.
We see these kits that we can buy at the garden center. It's a box, and you have to follow a certain procedure, and you get button mushrooms, and if you let them go, they grow larger. How is that different than the growing in the logs? Which is better?
I wouldn't say one or the other is better, just depending on your situation. The ones that I think you're talking about in the bag, that is just a mush, you know, the mushroom is growing on a different material. So there's a lot of those kits that are in a bag, and it's really nice because you don't need a lot of space, where when you're doing log cultivation, you need more space just because of the difference in size. So I think it's just about preference and what kind of environment you're working with.
Okay, and what is Fungi Freights? That's the organization you're associated with. What makes them different? What is it?
So Fungi Freights is an urban mushroom lab and educational breeding ground. Along with cultivating fungi for food, medicine, and remediation, we do our best to educate the community on the beneficial properties mushrooms have and how they can be incorporated with our everyday life. So just educating the community on a food source that is highly nutritious and pretty secure and can add more vitality to the community through using it as a food, using it medicinally, and for remediation purposes.
I want to go back and revisit the foraging for mushrooms and trying to identify. To be clear on what you said, there's no real legitimate / guideline available to determine, hey, I found this mushroom in the backyard, in the back 40, in the woods. It looks XYZ, so I know it's edible. There's not really, you have to understand that, correct?
It's all about practice. So if you do find a mushroom you think it looks like, you know, an edible mushroom that you're kind of familiar with, you can go to your field guide. There's something you can do that's called taking a spore print. Mushrooms have their own, like, fingerprint, so to speak, and it's kind of hard to describe how to do this over the phone, so to speak, but you can take a spore print. A lot of them have different color spore prints, so you have a mushroom, say it looks like another mushroom that's poisonous, but they have different color spore prints. You can take the spore print and maybe cancel out some of those, like, things via spore printing. And if you look that procedure up, it'll explain very well how to do it. And it's a pretty easy way to identify certain mushrooms.
Well, I'll ask you this, because Holly and I, we were talking about, you know, you coming on the program, and we ask questions to our guests that we do not know the answer to, and that's why we bring experts in like you. What is the difference between a normal mushroom and a psychedelic mushroom? We hear the word psychedelics when we hear about the 70s and rock bands and all. What is the actual definition between the two?
So a psychedelic mushroom obviously takes you on a spiritual or a trip, so to speak, and this happens. Usually the mushrooms are from the psilocybe genus, and these mushrooms contain a property known as psilocybin. When you ingest the psilocybin, your body breaks it down into psilocin via dephosphorylation, and the psilocin is a psychoactive compound, and it molecularly mimics serotonin, so then it is able to attach to your serotonin receptors and undergo neurogenesis, open up new neurological pathways, and induce, like, new neurons to grow within your brain. But that's the basic difference, is they contain a psychoactive compound known as psilocybin.
Okay, great. So how can we find out more about you and your organization?
I do have a website, www.fungifreights.com. I'm on Instagram, the social media, Instagram, Facebook. If you just type in Fungi Freights, it should come up. And I'm also working on a Kickstarter right now. I just launched a Kickstarter to kind of kick this community educational breeding ground into play. So I have that fundraiser going on as well.
Well, Tess, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to educate Holly, myself, and all of our listeners on mushrooms, fungi, and understanding how we can grow them in our own home and on our own property.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it'll be your garden questions and our garden answers right after this.
If you have a gardening question, now is the time to call in on the ivorganics.com 3-in-1 Plant Guard Hotline at 414-444-5250.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar, honey, or any alternative sweetener you'd like. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Available at most natural food stores and online.
Do you have a problem with deer or small herbivores eating your vegetation? There is a natural solution that is safe for your pets and family. Bobex is the answer, an environmentally friendly solution to protect your plants, will not wash off, and is guaranteed. Bobex Deer was independently tested against 9 known competitors and rated 93% effective, second only to a physical barrier. Bobex can be used on all types of ornamentals, trees, and shrubs. Ask for it by name at your local independent garden center. Find out more, visit Bobex.com. BOBEX.COM.
An Oya is an unglazed porous clay pot with a short neck and a wider belly. Bury your Oya neck deep in your raised bed, container, or ground garden and let the Oya do your watering by releasing water as needed. How? By soil moisture tension for all you techies out there. This is an eco-friendly, efficient, ancient way to water your plants using up to 70% less water than other irrigation methods. It saves you time and is easy to install. Find a retailer through drippingspringsoyas.com. Smart watering, easy gardening.
Flame Engineering, home of the Weed Dragon, the perfect propane torch kit for home and garden use. For killing weeds, no need to pull or spray. 100 other uses. Find out more at flameengineering.com. The Gardener's Hollow Leg, the debris and harvesting bag you wear, comes with its own belt attachment, perfect for doing light pruning, weeding, harvesting on the ground or on a ladder, and many other uses. Find out more at thegardenershollowleg.com.
Save 10% by using the word veggies at checkout.
Bluemel's Garden and Landscape Center offers an awesome selection of high-quality garden and landscape products. We have just the plants you're looking for. Annuals, perennials, veggies, herbs, and more. Plus, you can always count on us to answer all of your questions and offer expert advice. Bluemel's also carries the largest selection of bulk landscape materials in the area. Enjoy a beverage from our coffee shop while your kids run around in our huge playground. Join our growing list of highly satisfied customers. Visit the garden center that offers everything you're looking for. Visit Bluemel's today.
Bluemel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener is brought to you by the following: Handy Safety Knife, BioSafe, Tall Earth, Chapin International, The Plant Booster, Ivy Organics, Woodman's Market, Bluemel's Landscaping Garden Center, Purple Cow Organics. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents, protects newly installed plants and trees, shields pruned and damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit, and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. For more information, visit ivyorganics.com. You can call in any time during the show or right now with your question or comment to 414-444-5250.
You can also email us at twvgshow@gmail.com. We had a couple of questions come in this week on a number of platforms. Holly, I'll address this one to you as you are the canning expert. Wendy asked, does your pear butter burn when you're cooking it in your slow cooker for the pear butter preparation for canning?
No, but...
What would be the... Why would it, from the experience, why would the pear butter be burning in the slow cooker?
One is, like, I don't add any sugar to my pear butter because it cooks down for so long that the natural sugars enhance themselves, essentially. So there's that. Also, you have to watch it. So, like...
It's not a turn it on, walk away, come back in 12 hours from work, and everything's supposed to be good.
If that's the case, then you put it on the warm
keep
setting.
Warm.
Right. So, you kind of have to do this at a time where maybe you are going to go to work, but you're not going to go grocery shopping after work and watch the kids' soccer game. Like, you're going to do a time where you're going to go to work, come back, and then maybe overnight you're going to leave a little bit higher.
It's kind of like smoking meat that you've kind of got to be around to monitor it, to check on it, baby it a little bit.
Right. If it's also, if it's burning because maybe it's lost a lot of water, and now it's ready to can, so maybe you're overcooking.
But now, whenever you process the pear butter, you want to not leave the lid on.
No, you want to vent the lid somehow. So either, like, you know, offset it, take some tin foil, make, like, little tin foil tents for it so that you can offset the lid.
It vents out,
right.
Let's see, another question we had is, could you add stock cubes to the salsa before water bathing it, or is it better to do that when you're using it before you eat it or in another dish? Thank you so much. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't. I don't know.
Does the question make sense?
No.
Okay.
The question makes sense.
Okay.
But I don't know why you're adding stock to your salsa.
Okay.
Not sure what that's about, but that's okay. So what you would want to do is, if you want to add a stock cube to your salsa for whatever reason, or maybe some sort of stock flavor, mm-hmm. you do that after you can your salsa. So you can your salsa.
Prior to consuming it. Okay.
Yep. So you can your salsa, then you would add this stock to it after you open it, after it's been shelved.
And this is the procedure on any canning item. You add your seasonings at the time of meal preparation, not in the jar that's a standard rule.
I don't know. No, because that's not what's going on.
Okay.
If you're making salsa, you can add seasonings.
But you need to be the raw ingredient. You don't need to add the salsa's the package.
Right.
That has the emulsifiers in it.
Right. So you want to add, like, say you're making salsa, you mm-hmm. want to add, like, cilantro, but pure cilantro,
right.
or garlic, but pure garlic, not like a mix.
Right, and that's mm-hmm. where people have issues when they use,
like,
those.
Like, when you go to the grocery store and you look and see all those packets in the baking aisle or cooking
aisle.
Just
keep walking.
Yeah, keep walking. Go to the pure spices themselves.
Okay. Another question here. Jennifer wants to know, growing okra, she also grows climbless, spineless okra, as we do. Do you strip the bottom leaves of your okra so it shoots up, or do you let it bush out normally? Now, we are successful at growing okra here in the Milwaukee area. We don't grow it prolifically because Holly doesn't like it. We have dehydrated it, and that does take a lot of the sliminess that okra is known for out of the harvest, or out of the spear, the okra itself. We grow two or three plants a year just to grow it and have a little bit to eat. We do not trim anything of the plant. Now, this is something, you know, down in the southern parts of the United States, Mississippi, Alabama, those places, you can see photographs of okra 8, 9, 10 foot tall and have 20 or 30 or 60 okra pods ready to harvest off of them daily, it seems like. Ours gets, last year we had some get 5 foot tall. This year they're about 3 foot tall. Of course, we're growing them in the same spot in which they were last year, so that was, we found out to be a no-no. We don't trim, we don't touch, we just let it grow. Now, with this suggestion, that may encourage more leaf structure at the top of the plant, which would put more fruit and flowers on it, and that's something that we can certainly look into for the upcoming next year.
There's really nothing wrong with that thought. It makes a lot of sense.
It cleans up the bottom, adds more air circulation, and puts the more vertical growth on the plant, which, like a tomato, if you trim the bottom, you're going to stimulate a lot more growth tips, can potentially put on more flowers, which will put on more fruit. So that's something of that nature.
I had a question.
Yeah, real quick.
From a coworker.
Yes.
They want to know, if they don't want to deal with their tomatoes anymore for the season, do they pull them out? What do they do? Do they have to pull them out? How do they kill them?
The tomato plants?
Yeah.
Just pull them out. If they're diseased, throw them away. If they're not diseased, which most of them will be, you can go and throw them in the trash. If they're not diseased, put them in the compost pile. Don't leave them in the garden. If they do have any disease, a lot of the coldness over the winter will kill those diseases. But get them out of the garden. Disease, throw them away. Clean, compost them. That's the best way to go about doing it.
You're always welcome to ask us a question via email, twvgshow@gmail.com. The question come in. I recently watched a video of yours on your website when you harvested yacons last year. The roots or the tubers were incredibly large. What fertilizer did you use for those? Now, yacons are a root crop from South America. They are similar to a sweet potato in looks, but they have a sweet watermelon cross carrot cross wet apple taste to them. We use Sustain natural fertilizer for those plants, and you want to have more potassium in your fertilizer for yotcons than you do nitrogen and phosphorus, because it wants that root development. So that's how we address that. Another question: how do you store your zucchini? I understand it is a summer squash that should not store very long, but I noticed in some of your blog posts and Instagram that you had them in March. How do you do this? Well, the way we have done this in the past, and this was purely by accident, for those who are still growing zucchini, here's how you can overwinter zucchini after you harvest it. We let it get very large. So we leave a plant alone, and or we forget about a plant, however you want to look at that. And we let it get humongous, 8, 9, 10 inches in diameter, essentially like a log, is what I'm trying to describe here. And then we harvest it. We bring it in a cool area. We put it in a side bedroom where the heat is, it's just a storage room, essentially. There's no heat. You could also do this probably fairly successful in a basement. And now when I'm talking the size of the zucchini, we're looking at 18 to 20 inches long, and these are 3 to 5 pounds in size, okay? You want to keep it, try to keep a 50 to 55 degrees, 60 degrees, no hotter than 65, kind of in that range. And you just have to check on it. Now, when you eat the zucchini in March, it's not going to have the luscious freshness to it. But as we call zucchini the tofu of the vegetable world, zucchini will absorb any flavor you put to it, butter, whatever flavor you want to add to it, it will absorb it. So it's going to be on the drier side, but if you pan fry it, if you bake it, it's going, and you add, you know, different ingredients to it, it will be just fine. So that's how you store your summer squash over winter, and we did that accidentally accident. Just that's one of the things that happened. That's how we learn. We are out of time, and we certainly appreciate your time joining us on the program. Programming note, join us next week when we're going to discuss lessons we have learned in the garden. We're going to pass that information on to you so you can not make the mistakes and have the information in order for you to be more successful next year. As well as we'll go over plant-based energy boosters, natural plants that provide an energy for us so we don't have to take supplements, or we can limit the energy intake of some chemically based and non-organic means of energy. As well as our guest, Paige Embry, will be with us. We're going to talk about native bees and understand their life cycle and what we can do to help them along now as well as in the spring. Miss any portion of this program or want to revisit it in its entirety, you have a couple of options in order to find that information. You can simply go to our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and click on the radio tab or the highlight tab on the main page on the right-hand side. That will give you full in-studio video and full podcast of the program or segments as you would want to view and listen to, or go to your favorite podcast providing website and search the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show or podcast, and you'll find all of the programs there. For Holly Baird, I'm Joy Baird, and until next time, we will see you in the garden.
You have been listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show. Tell a friend and join Joey and Holly again next week so we can all grow together. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is a production of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com in association with WI Garden Media Broadcasting, live from the WNOV 860 AM and the W293CX 106.5 FM, Courier Communications Studios in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.